Good evening. How the devil are you? Well? Yes. Very nice to be here with the news from Middle England, if that doesn't mean much to you. Think of it as the polar opposite of gangster shit. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about this evening, actually, is something which has crossed my radar in the last week or two. Radar is like gaydar, but for ships. I'm using it metaphorically. The general debate in Middle England, you're going to have to take my word for this, I realise as I look around the room, but there is a degree of consternation about the degree to which the essentially American tradition of Halloween has overwhelmed the ancient British tradition of Guy Fawkes, bonfire, fireworks and so on. I personally, to be honest with you, I do tend to support fireworks night. I would rather my children were out on the streets blowing shit up rather than going door to door begging for sweets like dogs. My issue with Halloween, really, is that it's not scary enough. These modern mass-produced costumes don't really set the pulse racing, do they? Back in the day, people used to show a little bit of imagination. This kind of look. You can't get that down at Asda. I'm not saying there aren't terrifying things to be seen at Asda. There are, usually bending over a chest freezer. Trying to extract 3-for-2 pizzas. Dressed in a pair of leggings that have seen one too many washes, but you can't actually purchase those. Pointedly not clapping there, madam. You have to put the work in. You can't just go shopping for these things in the local supermarket. My children have embraced this idea. They now use a good deal of creativity and invention when they trick or treat. They have custom-made, bespoke approaches to each house. For instance, old Mr. Jenkins at number 14, whose wife died recently. My daughter dressed up in an extraordinarily accurate simulacrum of his wife. In miniature, appeared on his doorstep. I'm back! Spooky, oh yes. Then there's Mr. Carter at number 42, the local paedophile. He's not... It's not proven, but he was a radio DJ in the 70s. There are some cases where I'm willing to generalise. My children dressed up in sexy clothes for him turn around and take a selfie before he knows what's going on. Then, of course, there are a couple of ex-servicemen on my road. To be honest, you don't really have to try too hard with ex-servicemen at this time of year, do you? Rocket shelling flares, tracer fire exposing their positions. The 2 weeks leading up to Remembrance Sunday nowadays in this country are not merely an opportunity for servicemen to remember their active time in the army so much as to relive it. It is extraordinary that we put them through that, but then we give them 2 minutes of peace and quiet on a Sunday morning. Bizarre, isn't it? Still, we all wear our poppies, you know, that's the main thing. I think we have to wear a poppy in order to demonstrate, you know, our allegiance and our solidarity. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but the British Legion hope to raise about £35 million this year through the sale of poppies. Halloween, on the other hand, cost the British public about £300 million. We spend nearly 10 times as much on Halloween as we do on Remembrance Sunday, which is an interesting exposure of our priorities, isn't it? I think the obvious solution, if the British Legion want to raise a bit more money, is to introduce lollipoppies. Instead of a paper version which an adult buys and pins to his jacket, no, have sweets which the children have to buy every day for a week. In fact, get lollipop ladies to distribute lollipoppies. It's perfect, and if the child refuses to buy one, well, they can take their chances with the traffic, frankly. No worse than no man's land was 100 years ago. Teach them some valuable lessons. I am absolutely sure that lollipop ladies would happily embrace the extra authority that this would bestow upon them. They're jumped-up little Hitlers themselves, if you ask me, who seem to enjoy a good deal more sentimental appreciation from the British public than they genuinely warrant. There is one at the end of my road. There is a school near where I live. It's not where my children go to school. I wouldn't have them going to a local school, but there is a school near the end of mine. There is a lollipop lady there who has lost all sight of the priority. Surely her job is to get at least a dozen kids together into a decent gaggle before she leads them across like some low-rent Moses. No! One child now seems to warrant her interference. Stop! A child wishes to cross the road. Slam the brakes on, coffee goes everywhere. You probably end up sending a text you were only halfway through writing. Head flask wedged under the clutch pedal, mayhem in the car. Just so this infant can dawdle across. You've got a great pole with a bat on the end. Twat the little fucker across the road if he's in such a hurry. I will leave you with this serious note. Do please buy a poppy. Just a regular one. I am sick to death of celebrity... Simon Cowell, I believe, started this last year with these fancy sort of gold and ruby encrusted jewellery versions of a poppy, demonstrating that he cares so much more deeply and in such a more celebrity... Fuck off, Cowell. Can you put poppies? A simple paper and plastic poppy was good enough for my grandfather. It's good enough for you. I have one for which I paid the suggested donation of £1 in 2009, and it served me very well indeed. Looked after properly, they will last every bit as long as a jewelry version. I think probably the main news, the main cause for consternation this week is the newly illustrated version of David Dimbleby. This elder scion of the greatest dynasty of British broadcasting ever, this man who is so respected, has appeared on the front page of various newspapers around the country, revealing himself to be adorned with a tattoo, a scorpion tattoo, on his right shoulder. No doubt not the most irritating prick he'll have on his shoulder, as long as the BBC continues to book Nigel Farage for question time for some unaccountable reason. A small, discreet scorpion. It took about an hour, of which most of the time, I imagine, must have been taken up with applying the bulldog clips to stretch the fabric into a workable surface. I mean... I've never actually tattooed a 75-year-old man before, but it must be like trying to write on a wet napkin with a biro. It's... I want to be clear. I have nothing against tattoos per se. I live in Brighton. Tattoos are very popular, and as far as I'm concerned, anything that gets the kids reading is fine with me. More. Actually, am I against old people having a good time? I have a next-door neighbour, Doris, who is 84 years of age. She's a keen member of the WI. I asked her what the WI do. She said to me, the first rule of WI is you don't talk about WI. It's not, in fact. I checked. The first rule is something to do with butter-to-egg ratios. But still. She recently agreed to take part in one of their calendar shoots. You're probably familiar by now with the WI calendar shoots. Ladies of a certain age disrobe themselves. It's all done in good... She showed me her shot. It was very impressive. She's either had a nipple or a belly button pierced. At that age, it's hard to tell for sure, but... something in there was glinting, but... The other thing... which has been a chief debating point in Middle England, is the emergence of the Christmas ads. The... Strange, we really deify Christmas television commercials now, it seems to me. The John Lewis advertisement in particular has pretty much replaced the Church of England as the source of all moral authority in delivering a Christmas message, which makes us feel warm inside. This is its chief purpose now. I don't think they're even trying to sell produce, as is evidenced by the fact that they premiered this advertisement during X Factor on a Saturday night on ITV. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with John Lewis's customer base, but let me assure you from personal experience, none of them are watching mixed ability karaoke on the television on a Saturday night. They are out playing bridge or buffing up their Labradors or face down in the au pair or whatever they are. They have better things to do with their time. Anyway, I don't know whether you've seen it this year. It's a lovely cartoon. It's called The Bear and the Hare, which to most of you, I imagine, probably sounds like options you're faced with at a waxing salon. But on this occasion... The Bear and the Hare, singular. That would require a very steady hand, wouldn't it? But... John Lewis people, they would think the waxing... Why do you want to have your vagina weatherproofed? But never mind, they... And it's easy to be cynical, but it works for me, I'll be honest with you. John Lewis adverts do give me that warm. It's a lovely formula. You have a sweet story, and over the top, there's a breathily homeopathic version of a well-known pop song. This year, Lily Allen is delivering one of Keane's bedwetting power ballads in one of those voices evocative of a child slowly losing consciousness in a ditch somewhere. Possibly having been knocked into it by a speeding John Lewis van on its way to make Christmas deadlines. I don't know. It doesn't matter what song you choose. If you sing it in that voice, it could be, I like big butts and I cannot lie. And it would sound like a Christmas Yuletide lullaby. It's fine. The only other app which comes anywhere near, as far as I'm concerned, for quality is M&S this year. M&S, who've got, ironically, a bit S&M. They have Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, I believe her name is, a delicious young model dressed as Alice in Wonderland. And just as you've accepted that she's supposed to be a 12-year-old girl, there she is suddenly in scarlet bra and knickers for tea, and you're feeling all Christmassy down below. It's a... it's not so much an advert as a honey track, frankly. A little bit further down the social ladder, you encounter Boots, who have a young hoodie going door-to-door. You immediately assume vandalising or thieving, but no, in fact, he's leaving presents for a variety of people. You do wonder to yourself where to get the fucking money from, but never mind. We're being asked to challenge our stereotypes for this time of the year, and that's nice. A little bit further down again, we come to TK Maxx. Their ad features a sequence of little faces lighting up as they open their gift and remember wanting this last spring. It's a very moving sight. The Church of England have expressed anxiety this Christmas that people will drive themselves deeper than they should into debt, that people will rack up debts they cannot meet in the new year in a desperate hope of providing a perfect Christmas for their family by buying unnecessarily expensive gifts, to which you can only say, well, you fucking started it! Gold, frankincense and myrrh! What kind of presents are those for an infant child? What's wrong with a fucking rattle? But no, of course. It's all right for the infant Jesus. Big news in the Daily Mail, the Bible of Middle England, this week is that there is a middle-class crime wave sweeping the country. The squeezed middle are resorting to crime. And the evidence accrued in order to demonstrate the truth of this is a number of items which supermarkets are complaining are the most stolen from their shelves. Now, my initial impression with this, as I'm sure yours is, that we all do a bit of grazing, don't we, when we shop? If it's a medium to large-sized supermarket, you're entitled to have a little nibble here and there as you make your way through it. This is surely understood, an olive here, a sun-blushed tomato there, and if you have the children with you, perhaps an extra-strong Belgian beer of some kind. And possibly one for you as well. But the idea is that substantial quantities of certain items are going missing. When you actually read the list, it begins to falter slightly. The first two on the list in the newspaper were Gold Blend Coffee and something called Glen's Vodka. Now, putting the vodka to one side for one moment, which I'm sure is something few of you have been able to do, but putting that to one side, any brand of instant coffee is about as middle class as an evening out at a nail bar, OK? Only two things are acceptable to be golden: retrievers and actual fucking gold, OK? Anything else is crass and tacky. Instant coffee may have its place in a car workshop or a provincial hairdresser where it will probably be offered by name. But in a middle-class household, believe me, it is offered only as a direct insult or a deterrent, possibly to your daughter's new boyfriend who has come into the kitchen still in his work boots and keeps fiddling with his ear piercing. To a workman you suspect of loitering, it's not a hug in a mug, it's a fuck-off in a cup. And that is not one inch of exaggeration, I assure you. No more steal it than I'd steal rat poison. Glen's Vodka, however, is a slightly different matter. The idea that Gold Blend is middle class is deluded. It's inaccurate. It's misguided. But the idea that budget brands of vodka are middle class is just surreal. It's the kind of empty bottle you often see on a bit of urban grassland next to a single abandoned shoe. And possibly a mattress, which is forming part of some sort of improvised alfresco bedroom suite. The whole thing reeks of consensual but bitterly regretted sexual activity. Even According to their own website, their own publicity, Glen's vodka is distilled in Scotland from sugar beet. Mmm, that sounds delicious, doesn't it? Again, I'm not a vodka snob, but I do think it's a good idea to buy vodka that is at least trying to sound Russian, rather than something that's cooked up in a still round the back of Greg's. So much for instant coffee and cheap vodka. A couple of these other products do, they ring a little more true as a middle-class target for the shoplifter. There was smoked salmon, manuka honey, whole gammon joints, and goose fat. But the leg of gammon, now this is intriguing to me. Who manages to shoplift a leg of gammon, even if you're wearing quite a baggy pair of tweeds? That's quite a challenge, isn't it? I should think probably the best way to nick a gammon is to sit it on that little plastic seat at the top of the trolley where you normally put Jasper, dress it up in a mini Bowden duffel coat and scold it on the way out for fingering the chocolates. Nobody's going to stop you and say, excuse me, your son stinks of pork. I think it's probably a safe getaway. Why is he wearing a little fried egg and a slice of pineapple on his head? It's his hat. Fuck off. The thing that's being missed about all of this, I think, which is the truth about shoplifting, which we all know, is nobody does shoplifting, really. Nobody really steals food because they're going hungry otherwise. People shoplift for a kick. It's a thrill, isn't it? It's an adrenaline rush. Shoplifting and even more so doing a runner from restaurants, which is great fun. But then you reach a certain age and you have a respectable job and you have children and it becomes impractical. Fact is, children are slow to respond to a request. They're slow to move at the best of times, especially when it comes as a sudden urgent move! They end up getting flustered and they leave behind a coat which costs more than the meal you've just saved. The whole thing is a waste of time, where you grab their arm and run for it, and it's only when you're halfway through the traffic you realise you're running along with a gammon inside a duffel coat. My two children are rubbish at it, as indeed was our third, who was last seen struggling to get out of her high chair in Pizza Express in Dulwich. Go on without me, her eyes seem to say, I'll only hold you back. Kids are, in fact, what I want to speak about this evening, and in particular, a phenomenon which is troubling Middle England called boomerang kids, boomerang children. The reason children are like boomerangs in this particular instance is that they are returning to home. They are coming back to you when you think you've got shot at them. No matter how hard you chuck them out, they keep coming back, even at the age of 20 or 25 or 30. It is, for those of us who have young children, an horrific prospect. I have two children. My little Hansel and Gretel are 6 and 9, so they're not so much boomerang kids as yo-yo kids at the moment. They return every bloody night. Regardless of the circuitous route I take into school every morning, they seem to find their way home again, and it's tiresome, but I'm legally obliged to house them for the time being. But the fact is, we only have ourselves to blame. We have made life too easy for these people. I remember, back in the Victorian era, I say I remember, you know, I've read books. In the Victorian era, it was widely understood across all classes, children are a nuisance until they are a resource. So if you had money in the Victorian era, your children were sent away to be educated. They were sent as far away as possible, some drafty boarding school in Yorkshire. You barely saw that you weren't formally introduced to your son until he was at least 12 years of age, could carry on a decent conversation about foreign policy at the dinner table instead of endlessly informing you as to whether or not you like fucking peas on this occasion. It's ridiculous. Not what I call small talk. Meanwhile, if you did not have money, they were sent up a chimney, much as they are today in China, which thrives as a result. It's no coincidence. I blame the politicians, you will not be surprised to learn. Ed Miliband was on Desert Island Discs this week. The thing that annoyed me, he started off by saying the most important thing to him was his family. He said, my family mean everything to me. It's the most important thing in my life. Well, perhaps if you genuinely want to be a soccer dad, go ahead, but perhaps you should be looking for a job a little less likely to compromise that commitment than prime fucking minister. That's right. There's room for one thing or the other. Maybe try yoga teacher or chairman of the co-op bank. They seem to have a fairly flexible approach to work-life balance. You've got to be serious about these things. I'll be honest with you, I preferred Margaret Thatcher, who famously said, I don't give a fuck about my kids, my political ambitions come first. She didn't obviously say it out loud, but I think you only have to look at Mark Thatcher to understand that she was saying it in her head every time she went, anywhere near the little bastard, and I respect that. I wish he was a one-off freak, but the fact is Ed Miliband is representative of what is happening to our country now, because we've all just turned into people who just want everything to be this big, fluffy, cuddly, safe, soft play centre forever. It's pathetic. We all want to flop on our sofa with our bestie, watching Towie and our onesie and drinking our smoothies. Every word we use now is some pathetic, dribbly version of a real word made palatable to children by putting E on the end of it. Even my own wife, I promise you, has started complaining that the shops today were super busy or a coat was super expensive. I'm sorry, I would rather you describe that coat as fucking expensive in front of the kids than super expensive in front of me. Use other language. True, though. Even packaging now talks to me as if it's my best mate. Have you noticed this? Smoothie cartons. These are the worst. I'm full of fruity goodness. No bad stuff at all, I promise, or you can tell my mummy. I'm a thirsty adult. I'm not a child that just fell over in a playground and grazed its knee. I don't need consoling. I want to drink you. I am going to consume you and bin the container. That's it. We're not going to hang out. You're not my mate, OK? The only drink that's allowed to talk to me is a bottle of whiskey, and even then only after I've drunk the first half, all right? One man in the entire United Kingdom, as far as I'm concerned, is setting a decent example in the public life at the moment, and that, surprisingly enough, is Prince Harry. Yeah. Who is currently in the Antarctic, mounting a challenge on the South Pole, leading a group of men who were wounded in active service. He's raising money for charity and he's taking on the Antarctic, which, to be honest, is an uncomfortable environment for anyone, especially someone whose main recreational habit is playing naked billiards. So fair play to him, I say. But what I particularly like about Prince Harry going to the Antarctic is that his brother, the heir to the throne, Prince William, has expressed envy for Harry because he wishes he too could get away from his fucking screaming infant of a son. He said as much. He may not have used the F word, but you could see it in his eyes, believe me. He's the only person left willing to speak the truth, and I think it's about time we were all boomerang kids and went straight back into the warm embrace of absolute monarchy. The House of Windsor, I tell you, that's where our future lies. You thought they were all over, but they're built to last, the House of Windsor. German engineering with British trim. You can't beat it. How the devil are you? Well... Yes! Splendid. We don't like change in Middle England. That's one of our main characteristics. We don't like change. And something that I have observed happening in the last week, which is a change which I find very unwelcome, it's a new introduction of an innovation from America called Black Friday. To be honest, Friday doesn't need change for a start. Friday is one of the few days of the week which is doing all right by itself. Thank you very much. Friday is a good one. We have a tradition in this country. It's called Poets Day. On Friday, piss off early, tomorrow Saturday. That's all you need. And Dress Down Friday, in which men are expected to go to work on a Friday, not in their suit, but in some sort of smart, casual attire. Do they honestly think that men wear suits to work as a punishment? We wear suits because we like it. We like to be limited in our choices. The last thing any man wants to have to think about before he gets into work in the morning is how to express himself through clothing. We don't like it. I want to be clear, for those of you who don't know exactly, let me clear, it's not a black thing. This is not a black... It's not like Black History Month, which has been now condensed into a single day for those who felt that the month was dragging on a little bit. In fact, it couldn't be less like Black History Month. Black History Month, as I'm sure you're aware, is a difficult and at times disturbing but ultimately uplifting tale of how once oppressed people asserted their dignity through pride and sacrifice, whereas... Black Friday is the exact opposite. It's how a once free and noble race of people happily traded in their dignity and were willing to become drooling cattle stampeding towards the abattoir of their own dignity in order to get some cut-price electrical goods. It's a disgraceful development. It is essentially the January sales coming in its pants a month before Christmas has even got its top. That's all it is. They try and dress it up as something new. It is not. It's just badly tied. It's a sale. It's a pre-Christmas sale. Why is it significant in America? You have to understand Thanksgiving in order to understand Black Friday, which we don't have, of course. Thanksgiving, which is a dubious display of sentimental saccharine, absolute, basically, the fattest nation on earth give their thanks to God for the plenty they have received by stuffing their fat fucking faces for an entire fucking Thursday. Gorging on turkey and pumpkin pie and pouring syrup on meat. The shops open at midnight on Thanksgiving Day so that they have no pause for breath. And this leads to the most disgraceful behaviour you've seen on the streets since the sack of Rome. It is, honestly, people die, have literally died in the stampedes to receive sales goods in Black Friday. It's horrible. They have guns being waved around in order to deter queue jumpers. And this is what we want to import here. Listen, I am under no illusion, right? The British people are perfectly capable of behaving disgracefully in public. But we usually know what's worth fighting for, don't we? It's a spilled pint and a looked-at girlfriend. Those are the two things. Essentially, though, Black Friday is an attempt to convince us all that if you're going to avoid disaster this Christmas, you need to have a bigger television. This is the kind of mentality, even if you end up watching it through black eyes that you sustained attempting to secure its purchase, this is the kind of mentality we have now. Here you are, kids, it cost me 700 quid and a night in the cells, but nobody will be watching the EastEnders Christmas row in higher definition than we will this year. Things are not necessarily better just because they're bigger. Certainly not gifts, I can tell you that. I bought my wife a pair of knickers for Christmas last year that were just a couple of sizes too big, and she went absolutely mental. And she didn't like the larger size bathroom scales either, despite the fact that they had a clever feature which updated Facebook every time you got on them. My real belief is that Black Friday is a bad thing because it wants you to get involved in the physical melee of Christmas shopping, and there is no need. We have online shopping now. It is a far more civilized. Sit yourself down in your pants, in the warm, pour yourself a decent measure of a good shopping scotch, and do all your Christmas shopping online. It's a perfectly British way of dealing with things. For exactly the same reason that online pornography is a much more British way of dealing with things. It's more convenient, you have more choices available, you don't have to make eye contact, and nobody needs to know what your personal preferences are. Unless, of course, your wife has set up some sort of Facebook update program in order to get revenge over the whole scales incident. But I'm here to talk about topical matters. Brighton has been in the news, of course, this week, as everyone has mentioned. The storm, which was buffeting our seafront. 20 pairs of arseless chaps were ripped from their owners and flung into the sea. I did consider talking to you about energy prices, which is, of course, a concern to Middle England. Energy prices are a matter. I actually received a phone call. I promise you this is true. I received a phone call day before yesterday at home from British Gas, who had noticed that I had left the fold and gone to another supplier and were hoping to draw me back in. They were actually ringing me up to encourage me while the newspaper was lying on the kitchen table in front of me, telling me that a near 10% price hike by British Gas had been announced. A completely illegitimate, unjustifiable raise. It's as if somebody rings you up and says, "Hello, I've just spaffed all over your mother's face. Fancy lunch? No, I don't. At least give it a day or two, do you know what I mean?" But I don't want to talk to you about energy prices because something else crossed my radar. I became aware that Russell Brand, some would argue the leader of our profession, Russell Brand, has appeared on Newsnight, interviewed by Jeremy Paxman, and this interview went viral on YouTube, over 8 million clicks and counting. 8 million, presumably young people linked to it from Facebook or whatever, perhaps unfamiliar with a news format program before, their first introduction to current affairs. Very exciting for many people. It's bizarre, actually, watching the whole thing, given the fact that Russell Brand is famously named after two things that you can do to cattle. It is odd. craftsman fails to do the third most enjoyable thing you can do to cattle, which is to grill them. It is perhaps the weakest interview I've ever seen. It was bizarre. I don't know if you... Did many of you watch it? Yeah, you've seen it. It takes place in Russell Brand's hotel room, which is humiliating for Paxman to begin with. He normally is comfortable in a studio with a swivel chair and a desk and some files. Instead, he's sitting there in an easy chair, which he doesn't really know how to recline in. Paxman at one point appears to be wondering why his sleeve was stuck to the chair. It's an embarrassing and humiliating situation for him. And he responds badly. He cowers in his chair while Brand gesticulates at him, and he tries, Paxman, to use language which he thinks will win over the younger vote. He says at one point, isn't it the case that you just can't be asked to vote, thinking that using the word asked in that context will win over young minds? In reality, of course, young minds are won over by the way Russell Brand speaks, which is in fact like a 19th century fairground barker. Oh, I could be asked to vote, Jeremy, my love. It's not that I lack the industrial application to engage with the electoral manifestation of my stature, blah, blah, blah. The point is, he is let off the hook on everything. His core point... His great manifesto is that there's no point in voting because that doesn't change anything. What we need is a revolution. And more to the point, he can see it happening. He believes we are on the verge of revolution. Let me say this one thing clearly. If you take nothing else away from what I have to say this evening, remember this and understand it. There has never been a generation of people in any country in the world ever in the history of mankind less close to revolution than the British people are right now. A more successful, comfortable and comprehensive programme of anaesthetisation of an entire population. We have our smartphones, we have our 42-inch plasma screens, we have Premiership, we have X Factor, we have Strictly. We have no interest whatsoever. We can't even get off our asses to turn the TV over, let alone overthrow the state. It's ridiculous. Revolutions take work and sacrifice, or at least a bit of mild discomfort. We have no stomach for it whatsoever. The people are comfortable, they're reasonably well off, and best of all, the work of absolute genius, the poor are fat. The poorer you are, the fatter you are. It's an absolute stroke of genius. Whoever came up with that? At least in the old days, the downtrodden, the miserable dregs of society who were discarded by their leaders were hungry. They were lean. They felt a grumbling, gnawing sensation in their guts that eventually drove them to the barricades. That is not going to happen now. But my favourite, my absolute favourite moment of the whole thing was the bit at which Jeremy Paxman says, so if there were to be a revolution and we did overthrow the state, what would you put in its place? At which point Russell said, I don't know, Jeremy, I'm just a comedian. Well, I'm just a comedian too, OK? But if I'm walking down the road and somebody says, excuse me, mate, my car won't start, can you give us a hand? I don't go over, flip the bonnet open, rip out the battery, short the leads, remove the distributor cap, open the petrol tank and piss in the tank, and then go, I'm sorry, mate, I'm just a comedian. I politely decline. I'm just a comedian goes first. Before you fuck up the entire thing you've come to save. That's all from me. I've been Simon Evans. Thank you very much. Take care. Good night.